Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Tito Jayam Udirayet. Nasta Prayeshva Bhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. So this morning, we're going to talk about the subject of impersonalism and read a famous verse on this subject from the 10th canto, 2nd chapter. So before we read the verse, I'd like to put it in context to its place in the Srimad Bhagavatam. This 10th canto is the longest canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. How many chapters? Anyone know? 90 chapters. 90 chapters of the 10th canto. And it is almost all lila, pastimes, and as opposed to the earlier cantos, which are a mixture of philosophy and pastimes. But always within the pastimes, there's some philosophy. And even in the 10th canto, we find this certain philosophical sections. So the first chapter of the 10th canto is very dramatic. The earth is appealing to the demigods for help because she's crushed by the weight of these huge armies. And then the demigods go to Vishnu, who assures them, "Don't worry, Krishna is coming." And then we switch to Krishna's mother and father and their wedding day, and then how the evil Kamsa imprisons them, threatens to kill them and imprisons them. So all of this happens in the first chapter. So by the second chapter, they are both in jail, and Krishna is about to appear. He's in the womb of his mother. And so all the gods, knowing this, become invisible and sneak into the jail to offer prayers to Lord Krishna in the womb. And this is a very philosophical part of the Bhagavatam. So this has a lot of discussion on philosophical points. So this particular verse, Srila Prabhupada quotes very often, and it deals with the subject of inappropriate means to approach God. Okay? The previous verse, the gods have said, the great sages use the safe boat of your lotus feet to cross the fierce ocean of material life. And by their kindness, they leave that boat for us to take as well. They use it, they reach their destination, but they leave the boat behind for us to use as well. Then, in contrast, they say, but those who try some other means to approach God cannot be successful. So that's the verse today, a very beautiful, melodious verse. Yen yen ravindaksha vimukta maninas.
Yen
ravindaksha vimukta maninas. Yen yen ravindaksha vimukta maninas. Tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya. Tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya. Avruya Krishchena Param Padam Tata. Avruya Krishchena Param Padam Tata. Patantyadho Nadrita Yushmarangraya. Patantyadho Nadrita Yushmarangraya. Yen ye ravindaksha vimukta maninas. Tvayasta bhavada vishuddha buddhaya. Avruhya krischena param padam tata. patantyadho nadrita yushmadangraya. Please chant. Yen yen ravindaksha vimukta maninas vayasta bhava davishuddha buddhaya aruya krishna param tada tada tadantyadho idadrita yushmadangraya. Yenem ravindaksha vimuktamaninas dvayasta bhava davishuddha buddhaya aruya krichena param tadam tata padantya dat ovishamukhaya. Yen ye ravindaksha vimuktamaninas trayasta bhavad avishuddha buddhaya aruya krishena param padam tataha padantyadho nadrita yushmadangraya. Anyone else? Before we do the synonyms, let me just ask any pundits out there if you recognize some words here. What is Aravindaksha? Anyone know? Lotus. Right, lotus eyes. What was that? Oh, who was that? Pandit Krishna. Okay, good. All right, good. And how about Vimukta? What is Mukta? Mukti. Liberation? How about Maninas? In the mind, yeah. So in the mind, they're liberated. We've mukta maninas, liberated only in the mind. How about shuddha? Pure. So vishuddha? Right, impure. And then buddhaya? Intelligence, right. So impure intelligence. Due to the impure intelligence, they're liberated only in their mind. Okay, so let's read the synonyms. Let's read together, please. Yen ye. Anyone or all others together, please. Aravindaksha, O lotus-eyed one, vimuktamanina, falsely considering themselves free from the bondage of material contamination, twayi unto you, astabhavat, speculating in various ways, but not knowing or desiring more information of your lotus feet, avishuddha buddhaya, whose intelligence is still not purified and who do not know the goal of life, aruhya, even though achieving, prichena, by undergoing severe austerities, penances, and hard labor, param padam, the highest position, according to their imagination and speculation. Tataha, from that position, patanti, they fall, adha, down into material existence, but your andraya lotus feet. Translation and purport from Srila Prabhupada. So again, giving a lead-in from the previous verse. Someone may say that aside from devotees who always seek shelter at the Lord's lotus feet, there are those who are not devotees, but who have accepted different processes for attaining salvation. What happens to them? In answer to this question, this unspoken question, Lord Brahma and the other demigods said, O lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet. Okay, report, who'd like to read? Just got a mic.
Aside from devotees, there are many others, non-devotees, known as karmis, jnanis or yogis, philanthropists, altruists, politicians, impersonalists, and voidists. There are many varieties of non-devotees who have their respective ways of liberation, but simply because they do not know the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, although they falsely think that they have been liberated and elevated to the highest position, they fall down. as clearly stated by the Lord Himself in Bhagavad Gita 9.3. Ashradhyanaha purushaha dharmasyasya parantapaha apar aprapya mam nivartante mityu samsara vartamani.
Those who are non-faithful on the path of devotional service cannot attain me, O conqueror of foes, but return to birth and death in this material world. It doesn't matter whether one is a karmi, jnana, yogi, philanthropist, politician, or whatever. If one has no love for the lotus feet of the Lord, one falls down. That is the verdict given by the Lord Brahma in this verse.
There are persons who advocate accepting any process and who say whatever process one accepts will lead to the same goal. But that is refuted in this verse, where such persons are referred to as vimukta manina, signifying that although they think they have attained the highest perfection, in fact they have not. In the present day, big politicians all over the world think that by scheming they can occupy the highest political post, that of president or prime minister. But we actually see that even in this life, such big prime ministers, presidents, and other politicians, because of being non-devotees, fall down, patanti ada. To become president or prime minister is not easy. One must work very hard, aruya kritrena, to achieve this post. And even though one may reach his goal, at any moment one may be kicked down by material nature. In human society, there have been many instances in which great, exalted politicians have fallen from government and become lost in historical oblivion. The cause of this is avishuddha buddhaya. Their intelligence is impure. The sastra says, na te vidu swarta gatim hi vishnum. One achieves the perfection of life by becoming a devotee of Vishnu. But people do not know this. Therefore, as stated in Bhagavad Gita, klesho dikataras tesham avyakta sakta chetasam. Persons who do not ultimately accept the Supreme Personality of God and take to devotional service, but who instead are attached to impersonalism and voidism, must undergo great labor to achieve their goals.
Shreya shritim bhaktim udasyate vibho klishyanti ye kevla bodha labdaye. To achieve understanding, such persons work very hard and undergo severe austerities. Their hard labor and austerities themselves are their only achievement. They do not actually achieve the real goal of life.
Does anyone recognize that verse? We read it last Monday, actually. Remember the one about
Dhruva Maharaj at first wanted to achieve the greatest material kingdom and greater material possessions than his father. But when he was actually favored by the Lord, who appeared before him to give him the benediction he desired, Dhruva Maharaj refused it, saying, Svamin kartos mi varam na yache, now I am fully satisfied. I do not want any material benediction. This is the perfection of life. Yam labda chaparam labam manyate narikam tata. If one achieves the shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, one is fully satisfied and does not need to ask for any material benediction.
At night, no one can see a lotus, for lotuses blossom only during the daytime. Therefore, the word of Arvikdaksa is significant. One who is not captivated by the lotus eyes or transcendental form of the Supreme Lord is in darkness, exactly like one who cannot see a lotus. One who has not come to the point of seeing the lotus eyes and transcendental form of Samsudra is a failure.
Premanjana charita bhakti vilochane sandat sadaiva hridayeshu vilokyanti. A lot of Sanskrit.
Those who are attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead in love always see the Lord's lotus eyes and lotus feet, whereas others cannot see the Lord's beauty and therefore are classified as Anandra, Yusamad, Agarya, or neglectful of the Lord's personal form. Those who neglect the Lord's form are surely failures on every path in life, But if one develops even a little love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is liberated without difficulty.
Svapamapyasya dharmasya trayate mahato bhaya.
Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead recommends in Bhagavad Gita...
Quick, give it to Trishta. Manmana bhavamad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru.
Simply think of me, become my devotee, worship me, and offer some slight homage to me. Simply by this process, one is guaranteed to return home, back to Godhead, and thus attain the highest perfection. The Lord further affirms this in Bhagavad Gita. Brahmabhuta prashanatma nasochati nakanchati shama sarveshu bhuteshu madbhaktim labhate param bhaktya mam abhyamnanti yavyanyas kashmi taptaptya Tato man tatvato nyamdhapa vichvate tad anataram.
One who is thus transcendentally situated at once realizes the Supreme Brahman and becomes fully joyful. He never laments nor desires to have anything. He is equally disposed to every living entity. In that state he attains pure devotional service unto me. One who can understand the Supreme Personality as he is only by devotional service. And when one is in full consciousness of the Supreme Lord by such devotion, he can enter into the kingdom of God.
Thank you. It's a very classic purport by Srila Prabhupada, written near the end of his life in this world in 1977. And what I'd like to do is we'll go through it. We'll go back through it backwards, actually. Yeah, just to be different. And now that the portion of our class where we torture new devotees by making them read Sanskrit is over. So the topic of our class is impersonalism. And impersonalism is not simply an academic debate about whether or not God is a person. It is very intimate to our own hearts and minds, how we understand God. In other words, it's not a question of if we believe this or believe that. What is the condition of our heart and mind if we do not think God is a person? This is why impersonalism is such an important topic. When Srila Prabhupada first started presenting Krishna consciousness to the young Westerners, the students thought, oh, the Swami has a quarrel with some group of philosophers in India. When he was talking about the impersonalists and blasting impersonalists. And they didn't realize he was talking to them. So, just technically to start, there's two kinds of impersonalists. What are they? Right, the Brahmavadis and the Mayavadis. Brahmavadis are innocent in that they don't necessarily dislike Krishna, the personality of Godhead, but they just don't know. They don't have complete information. Whereas the Mayavadis are deliberately putting Krishna in a second position. So the Brahman, or the impersonal existence of God, is highest, and then it manifests itself as Krishna. So, or this one, or that one, or the other one. So that this is the Mayavadis. And according to the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they are the worst offenders. So, what does it mean, this impersonalism? So, please go back to the translation. The demigods are saying to Lord Krishna that, O lotus-eyed Lord, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure, and they fall down from their position because they have no regard for your lotus feet. His eyes are like lotuses. His feet are like lotuses. Other parts, his navel is like a lotus. The lotus is considered the highest emblem of beauty and perfection. So Krishna's body has all of these features that resemble lotus flowers in different ways. And that's very, very beautiful. So the gods are praising Krishna as being such a beautiful, attractive person. And those who don't know his beauty or have no regard for it may think themselves free of all the problems of life, but in fact they inevitably fall down again. What does this word mean anyway? Liberation. There are many meanings of liberation in the Vedas, but in general it means to be freed of the anxieties that beset our lives, to be free of the responsibilities, the entanglements, to the confusion, the pain, all of the negative existent part of our existence. To be free of all that is considered liberation. So in pursuing liberation, people take many approaches. For some people, it is power. It's interesting, Prabhupada kind of refers to that in this purport, very timely for our presidential election. We work very hard to get this high post, thinking that when I am in charge, when I have this powerful position, then all my problems will be solved. But the opposite is true. You know, in America, there's this separation of church and state, but in India, and of course, Prabhupada's presenting from the Indian context, very often the politicians and sadhus are kind of mixed, and that the politicians really want to present themselves as saintly persons. And there have been actually some very, by our standards, very saintly leaders in India. What was the name of that prime minister some years ago? Vajpayee, and before him Desai, Morarji Desai. Yeah, these were like brahmachari, or at least very renounced individuals who were very, very pious and attempted to bring religious principles into governance. But Prabhupada is saying that even such people cannot maintain their positions and inevitably will fall down. What does that mean? To fall down from a liberated position means that although we've given up everything for a higher purpose, at some point we get back into the same stuff we once gave up. That's what it really means to fall down. In other words, the pleasure that we're getting in our spiritual realization is insufficient to really help us be through with our materialistic attachments. See? That's the failure of the vimukta maninas, those who are liberated in their minds. Now, in my teenage years, I read a book that inspired me about spirituality by an impersonalist. And I did not have a real good fund of knowledge, but there's something about impersonalism. It just kind of intrigues you, like there's something higher, there's something higher. It doesn't tell you what it is, but it just kind of lingers like a scent in the room. Oh, there's something beyond this ordinary life. Anyone have this experience? Yeah, so it's like trying to pin Jell-O to the wall. You know, you can't get anything specific on it, but there's something intriguing about it. So a friend of mine saw this impersonalist, the author of this book, in his later life. He'd had a stroke, and he was incapacitated somewhat, but still able to speak. So he was describing that when he was being wheeled down the hallway, having had his stroke, he was just looking at the pipes overhead in the hallway and not thinking of, and he couldn't say what it was he was supposed to be thinking of but wasn't. This is the problem with the impersonalist. He's supposed to be thinking of God somehow, but he doesn't know who God is. So he's supposed to be thinking of divinity or the Brahman or how everything is one. But that doesn't satisfy the heart in an emotional crisis. You know, we want to call out to somebody. We want to think of somebody. We want to have a relationship with somebody in the heat of the crisis, you know. So this is the reason there's a fall down. There's no relationship. Just like marriage, for example. Many of us have experienced in our families that, you know, the relationship between husband and wife can become very stressful. And it is difficult to sometimes maintain that relationship. But because there is a commitment to the relationship, successful marriages endure. There's a commitment. No, I'm committed to this person. I'm going to take it seriously. I'm going to stay with this person, even though they're complete jerks. I just added that part in relation to marriage, not in relation to Krishna. Actually, the opposite is true. Krishna is so committed to us that in spite of all of our stupid things, he just stays with us and stays with us. That is unconditional love. So Krishna is giving us unconditional love. And then we learn from so many verses that are quoted in this purport how he's a person. All he's asking for is a little reciprocation. And he doesn't force that. He's just saying, if you reciprocate, then this liberation that you want from all your unhappiness that you're willing to work so hard for, that comes automatically, just as a byproduct. It is hardly worth mentioning. It's so insignificant. Because the pleasure of that relationship is so intense that all the problems are immediately obliterated. All the negatives are gone. And just getting rid of the negatives does not establish the positive. This is the point. So impersonalism means that without bothering to acknowledge the superiority of another person, and without managing to humble ourselves sufficiently to worship that person, we just want a relief of all of our problems. That, in essence, is impersonalism. Just like, for example, if you are going to a big house, you see a nice house with a nice lawn and vegetables and fruit trees growing in the yard, so you think, I will just go and take some. I'm hungry, let me go and take some of these nice fruits. So the thought never crosses our mind, who is the proprietor here? If we just want to ignore, yes, I'm sure somebody owns it, but I don't care. You know, I'm not going to ask them. I'm not going to bother with them. I'm just going to pretend they don't exist and see what I can get for my enjoyment. See? This is impersonalism. Without thinking properly, hey, somebody owns this. This is avishuddha buddhaya, impure intelligence. Nobody owns it. I don't have to answer to anybody. I just want to enjoy it, and there's no person involved. You see how this selfish mentality is such poor character inherently. This is why they can't stay in that position. Let's look at this another way. Have you ever had a conversation with a person of some religious persuasion and just asked them, you know, what is your philosophy? Or, like, in a nutshell, how would you summarize your philosophy? Have you ever had that conversation? Anyone like to share that experience? If not, I'll share mine. Anyone? Yeah?
Well, it's in my travels along the Eastern Seaboard, I had a lot of opportunities in which I was able to ask, what is your philosophy on, you know, anything? And it's a lot of times it's the answer would be, well, we're not going to tell you our philosophy. You need to be here longer. You wouldn't understand it. You haven't given us enough money. You know, it's that sort of thing. When I was in the Baptist faith, I had a lot of run-ins with other denominations, and a lot of times I would ask, well, you know, what are the differences? And a lot of times people wouldn't even know. They're just like, well, you know, there are differences. And, you know, I'm Methodist, and that's all you need to know. And so it's you know, it's my run-ins weren't exactly, you know, they weren't exactly informative, but at the same time, it's I felt like a lot of the time people didn't necessarily even no, they just kind of were in faith and being alone.
This has been my experience also, and I don't want to criticize anybody, because somebody who's interested in God consciousness is better than the average person by far. But at the same time, they're suffering from a poor fund of knowledge, and this is my point. Can you summarize your philosophy? Can you say what is your philosophy? Well, no, but I believe it, you know, very often. Or not wanting to appear ignorant, they'll make one up on the spot. Yeah. This is called spiritual without being religious. You know, you have the license to be creative, very creative philosophically. And, you know, whatever pops into your head, that's what you believe at that particular moment. So just consider what we've gotten from Srila Prabhupada. And If somebody asks you that question, in a nutshell, okay, what is your philosophy? How would you answer it in like 10 words or less? Who wants to try? Okay, Krishna is God and? Okay, but philosophy means how I live my life, so that's part of it. What's the other part? Stephanie? Okay. Okay, Krishna is God. Loving God is the goal of life. And to achieve love of God, we serve. Right. We're created by God to serve. Simple things. That Krishna is God. My position is to serve him. And by serving him, I'll be happy and develop love of God, which is the goal of life. That service, in other words, begins maybe routinely, and develops a sweetness that is evidence of love of God unfolding. So, yeah, here's our philosophy in a nutshell. There is a supreme person. There's someone superior to us. It's like the average person is thinking, looking out in the sky at night, there's so many planets, so many stars and planets out there, so many galaxies, but of all the galaxies, the Milky Way is the best. And so many millions and billions of planets in the Milky Way. And of all these planets, Mother Earth is the best. And on Earth, there are so many countries. But United States, we are the best. And in America, there are so many cities. But my hometown, that is the best of them all. And in my hometown, there's so many neighborhoods. But the neighborhood where I grew up, this is the best one. And in my neighborhood, there are so many families. But of all those families, our family is the best. And of all the people in my family. That was a little bit different, but he was saying something like that to Tamal Krishnamurti. Right? But the point is that everybody is thinking themselves the most important, if not objectively. In other words, thinking I'm better than everyone in the world. Because very few people think that way in reality. But at the same time, almost everybody thinks subjectively that I'm the most important person in the world. Right? I'm the most important person in creation. And that's very natural because we see everything through our eyes and from our perspective. So Krishna consciousness means consciously coming to realize there is somebody more important than me. And the more I become conscious of that person, then the more my problems evaporate. All these things I felt were so important and so difficult, they're insignificant compared to this other person who's so incredible. So this is the function of human life. This is the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. This is a way to be happy in life. To understand there's somebody bigger than us and more important than us and fascinating, more fascinating than us, yes, believe it or not. And, you know, becoming preoccupied with this person. This is actual God consciousness. Then the byproducts that are so interesting to impersonalists and other people, liberation, etc., all those things just come automatically. It's said that liberation throws herself at the feet of the devotee, saying, please, take me, take me. The devotee is only interested in devotional service. So one of the symptoms of pure devotional service, if you remember, if you've read The Nectar of Devotion, is that it, what? It relieves distress. It places one in transcendental bliss. But in relation to liberation, anyone remember? Yes. It derides even the conception of liberation. Who wants to be liberated when serving Krishna is so nice? So this is the difference between personalism and impersonalism. To be overwhelmed with the beauty, with the majesty, with the brilliance, with the humor, with the unlimited, unfathomable qualities of our Creator. That is blissful, happy, wholesome human life. A life of integrity, a life of morality. A life of service to—I mean—a beneficial life to humanity. Okay, in other words, not just helping other people physically, but ourselves becoming Krishna conscious automatically benefits the world and anyone we come in touch with. So this is the difference between impersonalism and personalism. So any comments or thoughts on this much? Anyone like to add anything?
So, I'm sorry. It's described that we are parts and parcels of Krishna. And Prabhupada often mentions how we have the, we also want to like to control because we are parts and parcels of Krishna. So why do we suffer so much when, even though it's inherent in us that we will try to control and we'll try to be kind of like Krishna. So why is there so much suffering if it's in, it's integrated in our design?
Because we cannot control in the material world. What can we control? You know, we think that we have some control, but in fact, that's just a very ephemeral situation. For example, if we eat a meal, then we don't have to think, okay, now gallbladder, squirt this, or pancreas, squirt that, right, or liver, the other. It just happens. We don't control it, right? We're conditioned. And similarly, we cannot will ourselves to good health or to lasting life. So our control is very minute. And you're saying Krishna has, he's a supreme controller, we're his parts and parcels, so we have a controlling propensity. Even big controllers like Maharaj Parikshit, king of the world, recognized that they were inferior to Krishna. And therefore, when the time came for him to give up his kingdom, he gave it up without any hesitancy. This is called Ishwara Bhav. Those who are Kshatriyas especially have a little controlling propensity. You do this, you do this. Right, Andy? Like military? So this Ishwara Bhav is the domain of the Kshatriyas. They have more of a controlling nature. And in all relationships, getting back to marriage or other relationships, there's always this tension, who's in charge, you know? Who makes the decision? Who wears the dhoti in the family? And this is why there's tension, because both people are trying to control, or in friendships, or in any sorts of relationship. So, a devotee means one who knows how to acknowledge who's actually in control and realize that Krishna's in control in every situation. So even if somebody is imposing their will on us against our will, we recognize that Krishna is behind this. If we're not able to deal with it, we understand Krishna is doing this for some reason. We're unable to stop it. We're unable to change it. Then we can recognize Krishna is doing this for some reason, generally for our purification. So thinking ourselves a controller is a symptom of a lack of Krishna consciousness. We should do everything we can within our actual control to please Lord Krishna. But we should also recognize that so much is not in our control. And trust him. Bhoktaram yagyatapasam. He's our friend. He is our friend. So even though he's in control of everything and all-powerful, because he's our friend, we're not worried. There's a... anyway, that's a very good question. We'll stop there. Any other comments on this? Yes, Prabhu?
In Bhagavatam, we hear in many places it is mentioned that one should endeavor for liberation, like all occupational activities are meant for ultimate liberation. So how should we understand when it is said that liberation in Bhagavatam?
Very good question. Yes, all occupational duties. What is it? Dharma Swanushti Papum Sam Vishvakshinikadasi. No, that's another. Atapum Bir Dwija Shresas. Varnashramam Bin Bhagasam. Swanushti Tasya Dharmasya Samsidir Hari Toshinam. No, actually, it's another one. Dharmasya Hyapavargasya. Sorry. Yes. That's the verse. Dharmasya Hyabhavargasya. All occupational duties are meant for ultimate liberation. Notice the phrase is ultimate liberation. Right? So ultimate liberation means being reestablished as the eternal servant of Krishna. Otherwise, we fall down. See? We rise up to some position, be it political or philosophical or some realization, but we can't maintain it. That's the point. Ruya Krishchena Param Padam Tata Patantyadho. I'm going to give you a simile that Prabhupada used that will emblazon this in your memory forever. He said it's like the cockroaches in the commode. They're running up the side of the commode, but they inevitably have to go back down. It's just too slick. See? So we may rise without deference to God to some position, but we won't be able to maintain it. This ultimate liberation, therefore, means that we really permanently resolve our problems. See? We permanently get free. And this is the beautiful thing about chanting Hare Krishna. Just, although it's an austerity of the tongue and the mind and the body, by practicing and practicing, then this sweet taste comes out of it where you don't want to stop. And when we get to that point, then all we have to do is chase that pleasure on and on and on. And the liberation is automatically included. That's ultimate liberation, all right? So all activities are meant, dharmasya hyapavargasya, nata utayo pakalpate, for ultimate liberation, and should never be performed for some lesser purpose. And that verse concludes, if you're on that path of pursuing Krishna's lotus feet, and you get some material benefits along the way, which often happens, if one takes those material benefits and again uses them for sense gratification, then one falls down. So part of the pleasure of spiritual life, real spiritual life, means that material facilities may come and go, and we'll use them for Krishna's service without attachment. That's how one retains the position of ultimate liberation. Is that all right? Okay. What other comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu.
I remember watching a movie sometime back, and there was a guy who had passed away. So there was a discourse going between two people, and one of them was saying, "So this person is gone." So other one was saying, "No, he has not gone. He has merged in the shadows." So the impersonalism is so rampant in society. Even the natural conclusion of people is impersonalism. Prabhupada, in a way, is against impersonalism. That's why he's beating on impersonalism all over again and again.
Yeah.
Because not only just in religion, people have this very natural conclusion that everything is impersonal.
Yes. That is a philosophically lazy conclusion. Keshi Hunt and I went to see a movie at the Hippodrome a few years ago called All One. Did anyone see that movie? So these two guys in Kansas just woke up one morning and said, "We got to find out what's the ultimate truth in life." So they started going to various religious leaders, and they discovered that all of them were saying, "Ultimately, we're all one." And so they thought this was a big revelation, and they went around the world and interviewed so many people, and including Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, who very diplomatically presented Krishna consciousness. But they managed to excerpt and quote him anyway. This is the default realization of the lazy philosopher, that it's all one. In the purport, Prabhupada refers to this conclusion that all paths are as good as each other. You know, have you ever heard that? So this is a similar thing to what Trishto was experiencing. To say, my path is as good as your path, you know, just accept that I'm on this path. Don't tell me your path is better than my path. You know, let's just not fight about it. And that's about as high as we can go philosophically. Let's try to avoid fighting over what is true and what is not true. Okay. And given all the strife that's associated with religion, that conclusion makes sense on a certain level. But it is just an example of mutual negation. Let's not, in other words, talk about what is actually true. Let's just avoid fighting. Marriages are like that sometimes. If we can avoid fighting, then we're successful. But actually, a healthy relationship is full of meaningful exchange in regard to the truth, what is actually true. and a shared understanding. So in order to do that, we have to be willing to look beyond the rather limited goal of avoiding conflict. Some people more than others have a real aversion to conflict, right? And so a response to it is to say, it's all one. Let's just not fight, it's all one, okay? But conflict, I learned in conflict resolution class, is actually a good thing if it's handled nicely. If you know how to cope with it and how to draw things out of it, then it's necessary for dynamic human development. And so we should not be afraid to say that personalism is superior to impersonalism for the sake of keeping good vibes in the room, you know? Because it's true. And the other thing about it is that people have never heard this, by and large, the idea that God is a person, isn't it? Have you experienced that? You say God is a person, and they say, whatever. but then you say God is Krishna, and they say, oh, wait a minute here. How can you say he's God? What about the girl? Are they married? You know? Saying this guy hang out with a girlfriend is God? Wait, you know. Immediately, so many criticisms because avishuddha buddhaya. No information. They can't say who God isn't, but with great certainty they can say it is not Krishna. They can't say who he is, excuse me, but with great certainty they say, oh, it can't be Krishna. I don't know who it is, but it can't be Krishna. This is impersonalism, you know, the default position. So when you say Krishna is God, you polarize things. But that's good. There's nothing wrong with it. Polarizing is proof that you're doing something. Just like, for example, every politician in this year's election is saying, yeah, I'm going to be good for this group and that group and, you know, making so many promises. And if the wind is blowing this way, he's in favor of this. If the wind's blowing that way, he's in favor of that. I'm pro-life in these cases, but pro-abortion in those cases. And, I am in favor of increasing taxes in this case, but against it in that case. Whatever you need to hear, that's what I'm in favor of. Like one party actually said, we're not going to let fact checkers run our campaign. So when we say Krishna is God, it's a polarizing statement. But if we are properly equipped with knowledge, then we can explain, no, it's better that God is a person than a non-person. Now, this microphone is a non-person. It can't give an opinion on anything. You're a person, so you can pick up this microphone and say something and use it. So you are superior to that impersonal thing. Personal contains impersonal. Just like you have a reputation, or you may have written something, or composed a song, or some record of you exists, painting, a picture, somewhere, something you have created exists. So that's an impersonal manifestation of you, right? It came from you. It's not with you at the moment, but it's an extension of who you are. But you are the person who created that, right? So you are superior to that creation. It is part of you, but it is not superior to you. See? So in the same way, God's a person who creates everything. And that creation is not superior to him. It's his inferior manifestation. Right? This is just logical. A person is always superior to a non-person. But thinking they want to avoid conflict, they'll say, oh, they'll just go to the default position. It's all one. It's all one. Let's not argue. Okay? Yes, Andy?
I was thinking about your point about lazy philosophy, what you were just talking about now. And there's a modern parlance vernacular of speaking about the universe. The universe guides me, the universe. I asked the universe for this, and the universe answered. The universe, and it seems like this kind of lazy philosophy and personalism, it's unfortunate, where the universe has desires, the universe responds to me, it has apparently has ears, and has a voice, and the universe has actions, and it's very compassionate, and it's very nice. Sometimes it can be harsh, and the universe sounds a lot like a person. Like it really starts to sound like, you know, somebody that has stuff going on. And so, yeah, it seems like there's a big religious mysteries file for the impersonalists where we just have to put, like, why did undifferentiated Brahman manifest all this way? Well, I don't know. I mean, it's a mystery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's good. Very nice. Okay. Yes.
I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about the non-sectarian. You know, Prabhupada would always say this is non-sectarian. So what does that actually mean in practical day-to-day living, this philosophy?
It means, as he said when he was here in Gainesville, learning how to be a perfect lady or gentleman. Non-sectarian means, sectarian means, I like you because you believe like I do, but I don't like you because you don't. In other words, a devotee has no enemies, ajata shatrava. Like, we're in favor of the Protestants, but we're against the Catholics. In my friend Pragosh in Northern Ireland was approached one night as he was leaving the restaurant there that he runs by a gang of tough guys. And they said, are you Catholic or are you Protestant? Yeah. There's a big conflict in Northern Ireland. You know, and if you answer the wrong way, they're going to beat you up. And he's standing there in his dhoti, and he said, well, I'm a Hare Krishna. And he said, well, are you a Catholic Hare Krishna or a Protestant Krishna? So the point is that we don't, we can discriminate without losing compassion, without losing courtesy. And if somebody is offensive and is critical of Krishna or especially the devotees, then we can discriminate and we can act in a certain way. But otherwise, we are very happy to accept everybody. And everybody can chant Hare Krishna without fear. Like, I'm converting. We had a nice program on Thursday night at UNF, and we were doing kirtan, and there was a Christian couple who had come. And I think everyone was chanting except them, right? They were afraid, like, they were going to turn into heathens. Whereas we can go, like, I sometimes go visit my mother and we go to church on Christmas, you know. And we stand up and sing the hymns. And I appreciate these hymns. They're very sincere, you know. It doesn't intimidate me at all. Or to say Allah Akbar. Or especially in the black churches, like the AME churches, they sing those spirituals, man. Like, it's like the closest thing to kirtan. Right? So the point is, it's non-sectarian to glorify God. And we can tolerate, yeah, people want to glorify God in different ways. That's perfectly fine. What we're going to criticize if they say that God is not a person. So then we'll say, wait a minute, that's wrong. That's just wrong. Okay? It's not a question of my belief and your belief. It's just, you know, it's ignorance. I can fix ignorant, I can't fix stupid.
Because I heard one conversation of Prabhupada said that making a Christian a better Christian, a Hindu a better Hindu, like that. And I was wondering, so if, say, a Christian comes in contact with this philosophy, how... Like, if they decide to stay with their... I'm just wondering, how does that actually work in the practical sense? Like, they decide to stay with their Christian tradition, but they can add this to it, you know?
Basically, if they are not critical or adverse to the personality of Godhead, that benefits them. Just like we can say, very honestly, we appreciate Jesus, right? Or Muhammad. The prophets, saintly persons... People who try to increase the spiritual content of people's lives. So can they also say the same thing about Krishna or about the Vaishnavas? And that way they'll advance, they'll benefit. Okay? All right, thank you very much. We'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.